Welcome everyone to Masterclass this Thursday, November 3rd, 2022. Is it amazing? It's already November. We have a couple of great presenters this evening. Aaron and Fallon will be presenting tonight, and they are a little nervous, so let's give them a big applause for coming on and letting us know what they know, because we love learning from everyone else. So, Aaron, are you ready? You want to go ahead and get started? You can't present if you are a guest, Aaron.
Would you like me to go first until Aaron can log in?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do that. I was going to call him to see if that would help, but
okay,
because he's in already, it's not working that way. Go ahead and get it started. Well, he's in now, but okay. Aaron, are you ready, or we can have Fallon start?
Sorry. Yeah, I could go first. That's fine.
Okay.
Give me 1 second. I apologize, just give me 1 second.
Aaron, do you need any help with anything?
Nope, I'm good. Okay, hopefully you should see my screen.
Yes.
All right, cool. So my name is Aaron Lima. I currently work for Amazon Web Services. I'm a solutions architect. And so what I'm going to do here is just kind of give an overview of first the cloud and then the service that we're talking about, which is AWS Systems Manager. So really, the cloud, when we talk about the cloud, what is it? It's on-demand delivery of IT services through the internet with pay-as-you-go pricing. And when we look at that, there's a ton of different functionality that comes from each one of the cloud providers. And AWS, we tend to bucket it up into these specific categories. One of the categories that we're going to talk about or focus about today is specifically around management tools. And so when we talk about management tools, you know, customers come to the cloud for many different reasons, right? One of them is cost savings, right? The ability to, if you have something that's pay as you go, you can use it as an electric bill, right? You turn things off, you don't pay for them. When you need them, you turn them on and then you continue to consume or pay for that. Also staff productivity. What we find in reports is that customers who have adopted the cloud run about 62% more efficient with their IT staff. Their IT staff is able to do more. Customers who well architect inside of AWS obviously are more operationally resilient. And then customers like to take advantage of the carbon savings in the cloud as well. But customers who do enterprise customers, large customers who come to the cloud, still have requirements. And one of those requirements is to make sure that they're secure and compliant. Obviously, they're coming to the cloud so that they can be scalable and resilient and also be adaptable. But when we look at the secure and compliant piece, what that really means is that customers are looking to answer certain specific questions. And so some of those questions are, well, what are the security best practices that I should follow in the cloud? Or how do I know if my resources that are in the cloud are configured securely or according to either my internal standards or to a third-party standard, whether it be NIST or whether it be SOC 2, whether it's PCI DSS, right? All these different standards to make sure that we can run our businesses and we're doing things in a secure manner. One of the most important things that attribute to that is how do you patch your instances, or if you have software in those instances. For instance, last year, a big vulnerability that customers were concerned about around Java was Log4j, right? So what version of Log4j do you have in your ecosystem? How do you identify the ones that are on the version that has a vulnerability? And then how do you remediate that? And then customers want to know, how do they perform asset inventory, right? So the asset inventory could be what licenses of software are installed in their estate, or what are the resources that they're using, what those resources look like, how many are out there. And then how do they prevent configurations that might lead to security vulnerabilities and exposures? So these are the typical questions that customers are asking and want to know how they can, you know, make sure that they answer these. And so inside of AWS, really what that comes down to is a service called Control Tower. Control Tower enables four services that help across that category. Enables what's called AWS Organization, which allows customers to set policy-based management across AWS accounts. This is also enables what's called, used to be called Single Sign-On, but now it's called Identity Center, which allows customers to aggregate the authentication information, authorization information into their AWS estate, and then also work in integration with tools such as Azure AD or Active Directory on-prem or Okta. But the tools that really are become important for customers to have on and that Control Tower make sure that it gets turned on across every AWS account is CloudTrail. And what CloudTrail is every API activity that is happening to an AWS account is logged and creates a JSON blob. So customers can track who's been doing what, where, when, and why. And then Config is a service that helps them to kind of audit or understand all of the resources they have in their AWS account, what it looks like in terms of configuration. But the service that we're going to focus on today is AWS Systems Manager. So this service is focused specifically to be the operational hub to customers to be able to see their infrastructure and respond to that. Let's talk a little bit about Systems Manager. Systems Manager is a hybrid tool. So this means that there's a lot of customers that use Systems Manager to manage AWS EC2 instances, but they also use it to manage things on premises as well or in other cloud providers. And the reason for that is because this service is a free service provided to AWS customers, including the things that they manage outside of AWS. Customers can manage about 1,000 instances outside of AWS at no cost. This tool also has extensibility. So it has integrations with tools like Ansible and PowerShell DSC, as well as Chef and Spec, so that customers can understand the configuration of their actual inside of the operating system of their EC2 instances. The SSM agent is open source. It's written in the Go language. It's available on GitHub. A lot of customers that want to see what the security compliance is, they can just go to GitHub and see how it's configured, what's going on. And it's also cross-platform. So if you have the SSM agent, being that it's written in Go, you can use the same mechanism to do configuration management against Linux systems as well as Windows systems. And then finally, it does have extensibility in terms of what it can collect from an inventory perspective. Now, Systems Manager has, I like to liken it to a Swiss Army knife, right? There's a bunch of capabilities that you have. You have a file in your Swiss Army knife. You might have a scissors. You know, there's different things that you can do. But at the heart of it really is run command. And what run command is the ability to run commands remotely against EC2 instances. That could be running ls commands, PowerShell, or bash scripts against these EC2 instances. And so you can run any script, any command against that, and then it will log it to CloudTrail. So then I know who has done that. You also, with run command, you can then go into these operating systems and then know whether they meet to patch compliance. So do they actually meet the patch and regulatory compliance that I expect, right? Or do they have the latest and greatest patches from a security standpoint? So with that, I'm just going to change real quick my screen share and then just jump over to my console. So I really see my console here that I've went ahead and I've gone ahead and deployed four different EC2 instances. So we see that I have one that's of a Linux EC2 instance flare and three that are of Windows. If I go to Systems Manager, I can go ahead and take a look at that run command first. So we'll go to run command, we'll click on run a command, and we'll just pick, in this case, since I have a bunch of EC2 instances that are Windows, we'll go ahead and run PowerShell. What we'll see is that there's these things called command documents. So the command documents allow us to be able to run, you can think of it like automation workflow that happens inside of the operating system. And in this case, it'll run specifically to the PowerShell shell script. So I'm going to do something that's kind of dumb. I'm going to run a Linux command inside of a Windows. Thankfully, PowerShell allows us to do this, and do ls, which it'll list out all of the things that are in the particular directory that this will get executed against. In this case, I can also specify tags. So one of the things that's important in the clouds is to manage things by tags, because you're going to manage them at scale. So you want to have tags that are set for reporting on finances, right? So you have what are called financial control tags. And then you also have tags for operational purposes. So you can use these tags to target a specific set of instances inside of AWS. You can also create resource groups. Resource groups allow you to do a tag query to group resources based upon, let's say, an application tag or a specific tag that belongs to a group. In this case, I'm going to choose these tags, these instances, manually. So I'm just going to go ahead and cherry pick each one of these boxes that are of Windows flavor. Obviously, I can also run in Linux because PowerShell has that ability to also run in Linux boxes. Now, in this case, you could output what the standard out of the commands are to an S3 bucket. But in this case, I'm going to have it pushed to another AWS service that's called CloudWatch Logs. So in CloudWatch Logs, I can take a look at what actually happened when I ran this command. If I want to do CloudWatch alarms here, I could do that as well. But I can also see what this command would be at the CLI level. So I can copy this out and run it in the CLI if I need, you know, if I wanted to do that locally instead of doing it here in the console. So I'm going to go ahead and click run. And what we should see is that it's going to execute against those three instances. So these instances already have the SSM agent installed. One of the things that's important beside having the SSM agent installed is having what's called an instance role attached to the EC2 instances. And so an instance role gives these instances the ability to talk to specific AWS services. And in this case, the instance role that's attached to these two instances allow it to interact with the SSM APIs. So we see here that these three have run successfully. I can click into one of these instance IDs and I can just take a look at what the output was. So we see that it ran it in the C Windows System32 directory, and I see all the files that are there. I can also go to CloudWatch and see that same output. So if I wanted to do something like catch some type of log stream or something in the command that, let's say, whatever out, whatever, I can catch it with a CloudWatch alarm and then trigger another set of automation based upon on that. So that's a run command in a real quick shell. If we take a look also in terms of Patch Manager, what I was mentioning before. So the way that Patch Manager works is, as you can see here, all of my EC2 instances are compliant. So I can get a really quick snapshot of, do I comply to the patching that I expect, or do I not? And the way that that works is that you set up what's called patch baselines. So each one of these patch baselines, you can think of it as a watermark of where that EC2 instance should be. And so if I go ahead and create a patch baseline, I can name it whatever it may be, select the operating system of choice. You'll see that these are the different operating systems that are supported by Systems Manager. I actually have worked with a customer who has used Systems Manager to configure Raspberry Pi devices out in the field that are attached to signs. So think about like add signs, and they want to update what's on the add sign. So really there's a lot of power in terms of what can interact with. In this case, we'll just keep it as Windows. And the reason I'm going to do that is because we all, hopefully most of us understand that in Windows, every Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month is usually Patch Tuesday. So when we take a look at this, right, I can pick what products I want to patch. Windows 10, Windows 7, 12, whatever versions. I can also specify the classification of the patches as well as the severity. So we'll just say all in this case and all here. And then the auto approval rule will specify when those patches are approved to be deployed. So in this case, if I was to keep this as Duro, any patches that came out into the wild today would automatically be deployed into this, to the EC2 instances that are attached to this patch compliance. But typically what customers want to do is specify a release date. They want to lock that date in. So in this case, we're just going to say, let's go back and make sure that the second Tuesday of October, whatever patches were available, we're now going to have that in the environment. And so from a compliance perspective, I can also start to communicate if it doesn't comply. I want this to be something that's critical, high, medium. How do I want this to report back to my operations team? Or how do I want this to report back to my organization in general? So I can set critical. And I can also do applications as well. So from a Microsoft perspective, if I wanted to patch, let's say, Active Directory, or I wanted to patch Exchange, if I was running that and I wasn't using O365, I can then do that as well. So these rules will specify what are the patches that get involved or get deployed into the environment. And then I can also do patch exceptions. So I can say, these are the patches that must be here. These are the patches that I never want to see in my environment because they break my third-party application. And so I can also have control over there. And then I would create this patch baseline. Once the patch baseline is created, I then can assign EC2 instances to these patches via patch groups. So I could take one of these patches. I can say, let's modify the patch groups. And what this will be is a tag that's assigned to each one of the EC2 instances with the value, key value of patch space group. And then the value can be whatever I want. And it'll make sure that this patch baseline assigns to those set of instances. Now, what customers typically would want to do is, in this case, they would set up these patch baselines, and then they would set up what's called a state manager association, which is essentially running run command on cron so that they can scan for which patches are missing. In this case, what we're going to do is we're going to use the next part, which is customers can then schedule what's called a maintenance window. So they can say, hey, every Saturday, I'm going to do some maintenance in my environment because people are not working. Some of that maintenance may be doing patches. So I can set up tasks to run at certain times. And when all those tasks are complete, one of them being install patches, if before the maintenance windows get closed out or during the time of the maintenance window. So if I go ahead and do run command here, and I'll pick a patch, baseline one, see that there's this AWS apply patch baseline. And then there's the operation of either I can scan or install. If I was to pick also actually run patch baseline, I have scan or install, and then I also can change the reboot behavior. So what happens with the SSM agent is that the SSM agent will respond to exit codes, either exit code 3010 in the case of Windows or exit 190 in the case of Linux, and it will proceed to reboot the box and continue to reboot the box and make sure that the patching equates to the patch baseline. In terms of orchestrating reboots and everything like that, the SSM agent here will handle it. But if a customer wanted to suppress that, they could by saying no reboot and then reboot it in their own time. And so, again, we could do the same thing here and just output to CloudWatch or to S3. and then we can run that patch baseline. And then, oh, I have an error somewhere above. Oh, I didn't select my EC2 instances. And then we'll say run. And so this will go ahead and collect that patch information that we want. At the same time, in this environment, I already have an inventory set up, right? So the other thing that I can do is if I want to understand or query what software is installed in my environment, I can easily do that using the inventory of Systems Manager. So in this case, do a real quick time check. Okay, cool. In this case, we see that I have OS versions of Windows Server 2019 and Linux. And so with this, I can also have a mechanism where back to the log4j situation, I can pick up what software is installed using config and then trigger remediation of the version that I don't want in my environment. I'll go back to my presentation. Also check the chat. So we kind of talked about run command, patch manager. We also, we didn't talk about session manager, but session manager is the ability to be able to, a lot of customers now inside of AWS are getting rid of jump boxes or locking down ports such as 22 or 3389. So those are the ports that remote into Windows boxes or Linux boxes. Obviously from a security perspective, you wouldn't want these ports to be open to the world. And it's a very common mistake that customers make where they say, hey, it's really easy. I need to get into the box. So I'm going to open this up so I can get into it. Well, if you're opening it up for yourself to work from home, you may inadvertently also open it up to that, you know, hacker or attacker that's sitting anywhere in the world. So with Session Manager, what this does is that via the SSM agent, we can tunnel over 443 over an encrypted tunnel to the EC2 instance from either the console or from the AWS CLI that's installed on your box. And then using the IAM credentials or integrated with Active Directory, we can then also have that cloud trail where we track who actually logged into this box to take a look at it. But most customers at this point, because they have the run command availability and they can do that via, you know, via API, they don't have to log in so much into their EC2 instances. And then they reserve Session Manager as a break glass. And then finally is the inventory piece that we talked about. Now, in terms of additional resources inside of AWS, right, there's what we have the AWS Well Architected, which talks about best practices inside of AWS from architecting applications or even infrastructure. There's also the Amazon Builders Library, which talks about not just building, but how Amazon builds in the cloud or builds distributed systems in general. There's also the Solutions Library, which I think is a good place to go to see and reverse engineer what has been built by Amazon employees. So inside the solutions library, there'll be different CloudFormation templates, as well as sometimes some Terraform modules that show you how to deploy third-party applications like Microsoft Active Directory, or even let's say third-party tools like NetApp filers or whatever inside of AWS. And then there's also AWS white papers and guides that talk about different, you know, best practices that you can do when you start inside of Amazon Web Services. And then from a certification perspective, so that AWS Systems Manager does show up in some of the certification tests, specifically in the DevOps engineering test, as well as the solutions architect professional. There'll be questions that revolve around how do you secure or patch EC2 instances. There'll also be questions around how do you remediate things inside of an operating system with automation. And so those Systems Manager questions come up, as well in the security specialty. And obviously the pro exams are based on the Solutions Architect Associate and the SysOps Admin Associate. So any questions that you see in the professional will be fair game in those lower level certifications as well. Any questions?
Do you have those certifications, Aaron?
Yeah, I do. I have all the original five certifications, and I just passed the specialty certification, the security specialty certification.
That's a wow. That's huge.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed. Thank you. That was amazing.
But I've also, I mean, you know, in fairness, I worked at AWS for 7 years. I started out at what's called a technical account manager, which is when customers have operational issues, whether it be scaling. So like I've worked some of the largest events. So like the Super Bowl, when you have somebody who's doing an ad during the Super Bowl, as a TAM, we kind of work with them to make sure that, hey, when they have that ad that shows up in the Super Bowl and it directs to the website, that the website's going to be able to scale and take all the traffic from the customers or the people who are showing interest. And then after I did that for about 2.5 years, then I've been in the solutions architect role where we advise customers on how to architect or if they want to know. Actually, the other day, there was a customer that I spoke to that had a security breach. And so they wanted to talk about, well, how do we know that we're following best practices and we don't have a breach again? And so then we kind of get engaged and help talk them through those scenarios.
That's very impressive. Absolutely. I mean, we're looking for faculty that have all of that and a master's too, though. But I mean, it's hard to find people that have all those certs and skills like you do already. Awesome.
Yep.
And that was really great, Aaron. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, wow. That was wonderful. I mean, we may call you up on some of that AWS work too. So.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I also had a chance to, one of the other students had interest and they pinged me when they saw me on LinkedIn. And I got them hooked up with some information about the military programs that AWS has as well, because AWS has actually invested a lot in military personnel. So there's programs where they will bring military folks in on a, you know, kind of internship, work, learn basis. So on my team right now, we actually have like 3 or 4 former military folks that do what I do.
That's fantastic. That's great.
That is so great.
Sorry that it's not something cooler like AI or ML.
It's great information because, you know, it's great when they can see that you can go from path to path to path. You know, you start with the one, and that's the way AWS works. Google works that way. You know, they're all starting to really do that to give you a path. And that's really good to see with AWS.
And they, you know, I mean, they're kind of following the Microsoft model because like Microsoft at a certain point had the, I think it was called the MCP, and then they had the MCSA, and then you became an MCSE. So there was like kind of like a set of tiers to get to the top certification. Right. And, you know, VMware does the same thing. Cisco has the same thing. So I think it's good because it allows, you know, if like for me as someone when I first started, like there was no way I could get one of the advanced certifications, right? Just didn't have the knowledge or experience. But being able to get that first level of certification, super helpful, because at least it gave me a fighting chance to get a foot in the door.
Sure.
And then as you get more experience, then you can get, you know, higher certifications over time.
Absolutely. That's what's great. It really, it starts you somewhere and you just, you know, start from there and start growing from there. This is great.
Yeah, I mean, not that I want to throw a Drake, you know, thing in there, but you started from the bottom. Now you're here, you know, that's kind of.
Yeah. Right. Well, thank you so much. Cause that was wonderful. They got a real
thank you
good
for
glimpse
letting me present. I appreciate
how that
it
works. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Your degree will just be the icing on the cake.
Yeah.
You're already
absolutely
there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And an internship too. There you go. Yeah. And helping the internship too. There you go. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Aaron. Fallon, are you ready?
I am. Way to set the bar, Aaron. I don't want to go after that. But I am ready. I'm just going to share my screen. Okay, can everyone hear and see my screen okay?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So I started my internship in August, and I remember the first meeting we were told everyone would have to present a masterclass. And I remember thinking, shoot, but I didn't say shoot. And so I am not an IT person. I don't have any professional training in IT. I actually work in governance and compliance. And I wanted to choose a subject that I thought that I was a subject matter expert. And also, although we work together remotely, I wanted to present something that would give you all visibility into the person that I am and kind of the things that I've seen and what had the situations that's made me who I am, the person I am today. And so in order to do that, I would have to give you a little bit of historical context of my history. So when people see me, they actually think that I'm younger than I am because I'm like 4'11". And I actually graduated in the early 2000s. Like I graduated in 2001. And I was immediately told that I was going to college, even though I had no idea what I wanted to pursue educationally. I had no idea what I wanted to do for a living. I was an 18-year-old kid. And my mother wanted me to enroll at St. Xavier University, which is a university here in Chicago, which is where I'm from. When I initially enrolled at St. Xavier, the tuition was about maybe a little less than $10,000 a year. And room and board was like $5,000. And so my first semester, sophomore year, the school informed us that they had increased the tuition to a flat rate. And the tuition would be $28,500 a year, whether you take 3 credit hours or 15 credit hours. And at that point in my sophomore year, I was estranged from my mother. So I was actually living on campus. And so if I continued at St. Xavier University, by the time I was able to get my degree, I was looking at $134,000. And then when I was presenting for my presentation tonight, I just wanted to look to see what the tuition cost was now. And so to give you like a little bit of idea of what that is, what that looks like now, it was for a 4 years for tuition, it was almost $136,000. And then if that student also needed room and board, it was about $47,000 after 4 years. So we're looking at about almost $183,000 a year. And so basically, as you can see from this slide, obviously with the amount of financial aid I could receive from the government, the math clearly was not adding up. And so I couldn't continue my education at St. Xavier University. And that made me bitter. It made me resent school. It made me just kind of like think, well, you know what? I'll just find a job. Like, you know, I won't pursue college. That's not really, maybe that wasn't for me. And so I was always working two jobs. And so when I left school, I gave up my job that I had through work study. And so I was working in retail, and retail and fashion are my first love. And so I thought, well, maybe I can find a good job without a degree. And so since I love retail so much, I started to look at any opportunities within the company, and I found out they had an assistant buyer's program, but I needed a degree. So then I was like, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't pursue retail. Maybe I should think about something else that I want to do. And so I was like, well, I've always liked helping people. What about social service? And so I started looking for jobs in social service, and I started working for a company. It was nonprofit social services. And I worked there for about 6 years. And it was more money that I earned from retail, but out of the 6 years I worked there, I probably got a raise one time in 6 years. And so by that third year, I needed to find a second job. And I just kind of felt like I was kind of like losing hope. I felt lost. You know, there was no professional development. There was high turnover. As I explained, I never got a raise. And so we all know that usually we spend most of our time either at our home or at work. And when either of those environments have that instability, it impacts you mentally. And so I kind of became in a slump, and I just kind of kept working two jobs until I can figure out what I wanted to do. And so it had been about 4 years since I had left St. Xavier. And so I'm like, okay, I want a better job. I'm looking for a job. I'm not finding any job. Maybe I should try school again. And so it was like, I want a better job, but I can't afford college. And so at that point, I was in my early 20s. And so most of my experience that I had gained was in social service, since I had been working at this agency for 6 years. So I'm like, okay, I'll try to find another job, higher paying job in social service. And when I was completing the applications, you know, you get to that section when it asks you about education. It's like master's degree, bachelor's degree, some college or high school diploma, and I will always check some college experience, and it always just reminded me of like having like some college syndrome, meaning like I've attended college, I've earned credit hours, but I have no degree. So it was just kind of like, where do I go from here? So I was working with someone who had enrolled in DeVry University, and she was like, why don't you just give it a try? And I, since I wasn't getting any jobs, I was thinking, well, maybe it's because I don't have a degree. And so I enrolled in DeVry University. I was okay the first two semesters. Then I got the phone call. Miss Brown, you don't have enough financial aid to cover next term. You either have to take out a private loan or we need you to pay in cash. So what happened? I dropped out of school because I'm just like, I'm trying, but I just can't figure out how I'm going to pay for school, right? And so I started looking for a job. And I don't want you all to think I'm a job hopper, because it's like I stay at a job for a number of years and I try to work myself up, and I don't ever leave one job until I have another one waiting for me. And so finally, after applying for several jobs, I got a call from an organization called Start Early. I started working at Start Early in 2013, and I still work at Start Early. And the environment and the experience for Start Early was completely different than that dead-end job I just described to you all. When I started that job, it was like, this is exactly where I need to be to become the person who I'm supposed to be. They had good professional development, great benefits, annual raises. And although I didn't think it would be important at the time, they offered tuition reimbursement. Within the first 3 years that I worked there, I was promoted twice. And so I started to feel this success, and I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to lose that feeling of success. And I remember thinking, so what now? You know, like, you're not broke anymore. You're actually happy. You actually love coming to work. What's next? And so, you know, when you're in an environment, when you're working with people who have PhDs and master's degrees, and you're the only one in the room, although you feel honored to be in the presence, to be heard amongst those people, you still kind of feel like, I don't belong here. You know, I don't have any form of degree. And so I just felt like something was missing. You know, I work for a good organization. I'm happy. I have a reasonable salary. I still don't have a degree. So I had to make a decision. Is that the missing piece? Is that why I still, even though I should be incredibly happy, why is it that I'm happy, but still like a part of me is missing? And so I would meet with my manager regularly, and we had a pretty good relationship. And she said, Fallon, I know that, you know, you always say that you don't want to go back to school, and you're very adamant about that. And she was telling me like the, you know, kind of like the good traits that she's identified with me. And she felt like that eventually not having a degree would be a barrier for me, because she knew what I wanted to do. And so she said, have you ever heard of Purdue Global? And I was like, I've heard of Purdue. And she was like, no, Purdue Global. And I was like, is that even accredited? And she was like, yes. She was like, one of your colleagues just actually enrolled in a master's program. And she was like, you know, I read about it, and maybe it's something that you should at least reach out to see if maybe you will be able to get your degree if that's what you want to do. I didn't act on it immediately, because at that point I just knew I wasn't going back to school. I just kind of had given up on it. No matter how I felt, you know, I just was like, that's not for me. And so I finally reached out to Purdue Global. And I have to say, when you are already undecided about something, that first point of contact is extremely important. The staff person that I talked to from financial aid offered me something that I had never experienced when I was speaking to someone from St. Xavier University or DeVry University. And the one thing that I could really appreciate and respect was the transparency. She knew, you know, I told her, you know, the experience that I had with limited funding. And she, you know, walked through that with me, and she said, this is the amount you have left. This is what it costs to go to our school each term. She was able to tell me she was able to give me something tangible, meaning that for the first time, I'm actually seeing where my money is going and understanding the process. And so she was able to tell me, you know, when you get a refund, don't use those excess of funds, you know, sign a waiver and we'll send that back to the lender. And then down the line when you need aid, then you can use that. And after that, she was able to tell me the exact semester, the exact term that I would run out of financial aid. And so I was able to plan for that. And so Purdue offered me like the affordability, the flexibility. Any staff that I ever came in contact with was very helpful and knowledgeable. And in my undergrad, I was able to petition credits for life experience. So that actually helped me save time and money. And so overall, I knew what I needed to do. And I saw the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm like, okay, this might be it. And so I had a plan. So throughout this presentation, I hope that you picked up that from many years of my life, I've always worked two jobs. I mean, a second part-time job was like kind of like my hustle. And so I had a plan and I started working for Uber Eats on the weekend. And so I used that $5,000 tuition reimbursement from my job. Every weekend I would work 12 hours for Uber Eats. And whenever I would cash out Uber Eats, I would give that money to Purdue Global because I really wanted to graduate. And I knew that was the bigger picture. As tired as I was working 7 days a week, there was a goal that I was working to obtain. And so I shared Uber Eats had actually reached out to all of its drivers and they were looking for drivers with a unique story. And I shared my story with Uber Eats and I actually landed a national commercial with Uber to share my story. And I don't want to play it for you all, but it's in my presentation. The reason being is I shot this commercial during the pandemic. And so I had pandemic pounds on me. And then it was like 20 degrees. So I had like 4 layers of clothing. And so I looked bigger than I really am. But I just wanted to share my Uber commercial with you all. Education is something that is extremely precious to me. As a woman of color, bettering myself meant finishing school, but no one explained to me how to pay for college. I tried to go the traditional route for part-time jobs, but it didn't offer me the flexibility that I needed. I like the flexibility driving with Uber. I can drive when I want to. When I was able to pay my way through school, that gave me such a sense of independence and empowerment. My name is Fallon Brown. I choose flexibility. Sorry about that. And so Uber, in addition to the money I was earning as a driver, in addition to the tuition reimbursement, Uber actually paid me $2,000 to shoot that commercial. And I just used that money to pay for my, you know, to pay for my tuition. And after all of that hard work, I was actually able to earn my degree, my bachelor's of science in business. And so after I got my degree, my boss told me, she was like, I was waiting for you to finish school because I wanted to promote you again. And so as soon as I, you know, received my degree, I got another position. And in that position, I stayed a year. And then I got promoted another time. And this time, since I had my degree, I was able to move to our corporate office in downtown Chicago, where I work in compliance and governance and also contracts. And so I had my plan, I achieved my goal, but now I wanted to focus on my dream. Like, what is my long-term dream? And just to go back, if you're all wondering, like, why are you in the IT program? So as I mentioned, that last promotion I received as a compliance manager, I work closely with the IT team and I work in governance and I work in contracts and compliance. And so a lot of that work that I was seeing, I felt like when I was looking at my career path, I would always see in the experience and education, they were always asking for like an IT related degree. And so although I planned on still staying with that company, I just wanted to make sure that I was making the correct moves within my career. And so, as I said, now that I had my plan and I was, you know, had got my degree, received my degree, I wanted to think about what my next steps were for like my dream. So throughout this presentation, I've always told you that I worked two jobs. It was always in retail and I love fashion. And then I also explained to you that I worked in nonprofit for a number of years. And so once I finished my master's degree and now that I can afford to, I actually want to start my own online handbag boutique. The name Line B is me. My name is Fallon Brown, and L-O-N is the last three letters of my name, and B is the first initial of my last name. And once I feel like that business is sustainable and stable, I want to start a nonprofit for women who, like me, they may have come from a domestic violence background, or if they have some type of financial barrier and they can't get in the workforce. I want to create a nonprofit that will help women like that. And part of that would be like job training, resume building. And also, if they don't have any money, they can't dress to go to interviews, or they can't dress for the jobs that they get. And so I intend on also providing those garments. And so that nonprofit will be called Goals and Garments. And throughout this presentation, I really hope that you picked up that I am a person that believes in motivation and strength. And I always watch rare motivational books to get me through what I was going through at such a young age. And I also watch motivational videos. And so the video that I have in my next slide, it's about 6 minutes. So I'm going to let it play out for about 3 minutes because I don't want to go over time. But I just really hope that you take something away from my presentation. And I hope that this next video will really help you think about what you want to do and how you're going to get there.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is gonna hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Pain is temporary. It may last for a minute, or an hour, or a day, or even a year. But eventually, it will subside, and something else will take its place. If I quit, however, it will last forever.
The margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second.
You got a dream, you got to protect it. People can't do something themselves, and they want to tell you you can't. Want something, go get it. Period.
Don't be afraid to fail. You can't always win, but don't be afraid of making decisions.
You have to believe that something different can happen. He who says he can and he who says he can't are both usually right.
That most of you say you want to be successful, but you don't want it bad. You just kind of want it. You don't want it badder than you want a party. You don't want it as much as you want to be cool. Most of you don't want success as much as you want to sleep.
Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us.
You have to dig deep down, dig deep down.
down and ask yourselves, who do you want to be? Figuring out for yourselves what makes you happy, no matter how crazy it may sound to the people.
Make a choice, like you just decide what it's going to be, who you're going to be, how you're going to do it. Just decide.
Why not? Why can't I be the MVP of the league? Why can't I be the best player in the league? I don't see why. Why can't I do that?
Said to the kid, it ain't about how hard you hit, it's about how hard you can get hit, and keep moving forward, how much you can take, and keep moving forward.
Get up, and don't ever give up.
And so I just really wanted to play, like I said, it's like a little bit over 6 minutes, and I don't want to go over time. But I just really wanted to share that video with you all because, you know, when you are, when I think about where I came from and where I'm at now, honestly, sometimes it's hard for me not to cry when I watch those kind of videos because, you know, when I was a young lady, 18 and 19 years old, sometimes it got to the point where because I was estranged from my mother, I had to sleep in the car. And now, you know what I mean? Like, 15 or 20 years later, I'm making six figures. I have my degree. I'll have my master's degree in a matter of weeks. And that's something that I never thought would happen. And so although I hope it doesn't sound dramatic, though, that's something that I take pride in. And as I continue my next step for like my dream, I hope that I can continue to stay motivated because just because I may check off a box or just because I, you know, achieve a goal, I am the kind of person that I'm trying to figure out how to get to a point where I want to be. And so I just really want to thank you all for taking the time and actually attending this master's class and hearing my story. And, you know, like I said, I wish you all the best and I hope that you all can achieve all of your dreams. And that is it for me.
Wow. That was like a graduation speech. It could be our keynote speaker. That was pretty awesome, Valen.
Thank you.
That was really awesome. Congratulations on everything you've done.
That was really, really, really passionate and kind of no dry eye in the group, I'm sure. That was great. I'm going to go back and watch the rest of that video, but I really liked your own video too. I cannot believe you did that. And I can't believe they only paid you $2,000. You deserved a lot more, but that was a really cool commercial too. So awesome. Great story.
Thank you. It was a really good experience.
Yeah, no, just an awesome story you have. You can write a book now. I appreciate you sharing.
I always say, you know, communication is good when you don't have any questions to ask after. That was pretty good.
Thank you, Scott. Scott has been my friend throughout like this entire process of our internship because we actually had a class last term. And like he would all, like I said, I'm not an IT person. You know, I'm a compliance person. And I always reach out to Scott and he'll always come through to, you know, to kind of help me. And when I was like, man, I'm like, I'm working this job because I had just got promoted and I was a manager. So I was like working crazy, but then I had our class and then this class. And so me and Scott kind of like, I actually can't wait to meet him when we like graduate in February because it's funny how you form these remote relationships with your colleagues and they actually, you know, turn out to be pretty meaningful.
Likewise, Fallon.
I'm glad you're going to go to the ceremony. It'll be a great day.
I can't wait. I already have my outfit picked up.
I bet.
You earned every minute of it, so enjoy. It'll be cold, but it'll be nice.
Yeah, I hope it's cold, because I had bought something like in the summertime that was on sale that I hope I can wear. So it better be cold that day.
I think you can count on that in February. Awesome. I can't wait to see you guys. I watched the videos. I don't get to go to all the graduations, but I just watched the video a couple weeks ago. It was a tearjerker, but it was really good. I cried through the whole thing. Graduation's really, really touching. It's a great time.
Yeah, because you think about all the sacrifices that you made.
That's the thing, Scott. I mean, when you watch the video, Scott, you see all the families and the babies and the kids and saying, "That's my mommy, that's my daddy," and it's like, "Oh my God, I'm just a wreck by then."
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. A lot. I've seen people go through it, but to actually go through it myself, I'm just like, man, this will change your personality.
It will. You'll totally have the chills. I do. It's just crazy.
Yeah. I agree.
It's a great day. Well, hopefully everyone here will be there.
I think that's all we have for today, right? It was just the two.
I'd say both presentations were just on point.
Yeah, that was really awesome. Both of them.
Impressive stuff.
Anybody else have anything to share? Tina, any words of wisdom?
No, I was just going to say, I don't think we can take any more than that. It was like the first one was so technically impressive that, you know, I'm really not very educated. And the second one was just so moving. It was a little much too. It's like, oh, I'm spent. Thank you. Great job, both of you. And I can't wait to see everyone at graduation on the videos, at least.
Awesome job, everyone. We'll go ahead and close out the meeting if no one has any other questions. Have a great night. Have a great weekend. And we'll see you next week.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.